Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Today is April 9th, and it's the voicemail episode, and we have a lot of voicemails. Thank you to everyone that called in, and we have Katie Sharp joined us for her what will become a weekly segment. Katie Sharp giving us some KT stats, and the Yankees just lost, so I'm in a bad mood, but let's do this. Let's talk Yanks.
Weekly awards, stat lines, steaming hot takes. Get your Yankees news with these two fine dudes. It's time for Talking Yanks. Talking Yanks with old John Boy. John Boy and Jake. Talking Yanks with old John Boy. John Boy and Jake.
All right, what's up? Welcome to Talking Yanks. Thank you guys for hitting play and joining us today. Voicemail episode. My name's John Boy. I'm coming to you from New Jersey, and I got my co-host Jake coming from Denver. He's a transplanted Yankee fan originally from Connecticut. Today's episode is brought to you by a bunch of super, 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 super special people. Reese Gilbertson. Rias Gilbertson, Steve Sibert, Seibert, what would you say?
Seibert.
Sydney Mook, Nick Mitchell, Sydney Mook, I recognize that name. I think she's on the Twitter sphere. Nick Mitchell, Adam Swayze, and Aaron Ivey. Aaron Ivey, that's a nice, short, punchy name. Aaron Ivey.
It's a power name.
Yeah. Aaron Ivey, it's a cool name. I like that one. Well, those are most recent Patreon subscribers. $2 a month gets you live access, gets you video access to all the podcast, gets you a chance to win two jerseys each month, one via raffle, one via contest, some other stuff, and it supports us, and we really, really appreciate everyone that helps us out. Jake, how are you doing?
I'm all right, man. I'm shocked at how mad you are. I mean, I was sad and, I mean, disappointed, obviously, because we had Verlander beat and we had Houston on the ropes. I don't know. Our bullpen didn't have it today. Britton didn't have it. Vino gave up a run. It's, you know, 90% of the time when Adam Ottavino and Zach Britton are going to come in, they're not going to let in three runs. And I know Britton's is worse. I get that. And, I mean, well, talk
Britton's
about base.
Britton's is much worse, yeah.
Oh yeah, it's worse. I mean, Ottavino gave up a run too.
I'm mad at Twitter, not at the game. Well, I'm mad at the game too, but Twitter's what's got me fired up.
Yeah, Twitter's gonna do that. And you live that every day, Big Daddy. I don't have to tell you, but yeah,
I don't get it. Boone managed a fine game, handing the ball to the bullpen in the seventh with a 2-run lead is literally the goal of every game for the Yankees. That is the game plan. And everyone's
people
like,
are going to be mad at Boone.
Tanaka was cruising. He wasn't. I love Tank, but he was struggling those last two innings. Like that double play Urshela turned was a rocket shot. Everyone was hard hit. He was struggling to find the zone. So I'm mad at Britton, and I'm mad at everyone that's excusing Britton. Britton fucked up.
Yeah, it was a damned if you do. I mean, there was a chance they were going to pull Tanaka within that inning, and then he gets out of it. And then, yeah, I mean, it turns into a damned if you do, damned if you don't. If Britton and Ottavino do what they normally do, we're not sitting here talking about this. We're talking about the Yankees just got Verlander and we're on a hot streak. If he leaves Tanaka in and he gives up a hit or anything, Boone gets yelled at for that. Why did we bring him out for another inning? He was getting touched up. So
exactly.
I mean, no one's ever going to be happy with Boone. He's got a little Giancarlo Stanton effect, man. Judge.
It bothers me that people, like, he handed the ball in the seventh inning to one of his best relievers, and they're saying that was bad managing. It just boggles my brain that people don't realize they're searching for a reason to blame Boone and skipping blaming the player who walked a struggling eighth hole hitter on four pitches. Yep. And then gave up a hit to a nine-holer. Our goal was to not really talk about the games on this and just do voicemails, but it's impossible not to when you have this is the game.
Yeah, it happened. The bullpen didn't do their job today. That's kind of where I'm at. The little sad, disappointed, but got to clap your hands and move on. Again, we did almost everything else we wanted to do in this game. Tanaka had a great start. The hitters got to Verlander. The bullpen wasn't there today. 90% of the time, Ottavino and Britton aren't going to give up those runs. So I don't know. For me, it's a shrug. Sucks. Wish we had it. And it might be even a more of a bummer tomorrow with Lasagna on the mound and we've burnt Ottavino and Britton. I guess Britton could pitch again tomorrow. Not Ottavino. He threw 30 bullets and he's been pitching every game. So. We'll see if the effects. I'm worried that the effects of this game are going to be actually worse than this was. It was Houston at home. I mean, they're really good, and our bullpen didn't have it.
Yeah. Should we still save some other stuff for the recap? Because you're gonna have to burn this game. So yeah, we'll save some stuff.
Yeah. I think we said everything that needs to be said.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's a lot more to talk about, but we'll shelf it. Just the initial frustration we got out of the way here.
Yeah.
That's fine.
You had a really nice... How'd you open this? You said, click play. What'd you just see?
I thought Zimmer, my dog, was throwing up, but he's got his bone, which means he's going to go on a crazy like crackhead trying to find their fix. That's what he is right. When he has his bone. He's trying to hide it. And all he does is try to put it underneath a pillow, and he doesn't have thumbs, so he can't really do that.
Right.
So this is going to be a whole nightmare that's happening in the background. What a dumb dog.
Well, you had a really nice click play and listen to us today or whatever you said at the intro. That was really good.
Yeah, I'm an intro expert.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I didn't know you had dubbed yourself that. So.
I don't.
I wouldn't have even said anything if I knew that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's my bad.
You're telling that's me I had bad. A nice rhyme at the intro? I don't remember. I just take it back.
It was good. You're going to be super impressed with yourself.
I don't prep those at all. I just look at my phone to find the date and then talk.
Like, I'm thinking you make it your signature, man. Like, it was that good.
Wow. This is great. You really know how to bring me up.
Yeah, man. Intro expert.
Dude, I can't get myself to come down. I was walking around my kitchen and Katie was like, how are you? And I was like, I'm trying to get myself to come down right now because I'm so angry. This happens to me right now. I just get so pent up. And frustrated.
And Jim, in the wise word of a friend of mine, a person can be smart, people are dumb.
I know, I just wish they realized what they do.
That's how they do, man.
Someone just said, if Tanaka pitches, if Tanaka stays in, they win it, and that's a fact. And I said, that's literally not a fact, because you have no idea, and that's the only reason you're doing this argument, is because no one can disprove you, because... no one can prove anything. It's like just a stupid fucking way to go about arguing something.
Boone's always going to be loathed because he inherited what everyone called a golden goose, essentially, and they assumed the Yankees would just roll to win three consecutive rings and keep it moving.
I know, and I understand that, and Boone will always get shit, but a game when you hand a two-run lead to your bullpen, that is... The simplest, easiest managing decision you could ever have. Oh, Tanaka on 80 pitches, third time through the order when he just had to get out of a jam and emptied himself to get out of it? Or Zach Britton, our shutdown reliever, fresh out the pen in the seventh inning? It's the easiest decision of all time. And people still acting like Boone did the wrong decision.
Luckily, the people listening with us, Jim, already know that.
That's true. That is. We're probably annoying a lot of listeners because I'm doing exactly what I said yesterday. You say, who's the dumbest person here? Let's debate. And it'll trap you. All right. So we got a lot of voicemails, Jake. I don't know how many. We'll see how many we can get to because we do have a segment with Katie Sharp, which we're introducing every Tuesday at the back end of these episodes. That's exciting. So, yes, sir. All right, you want to go into voicemails?
Yeah, let's go into my voicemails. I'm just going to play some of my old voicemails I've never deleted from my phone. Get excited for KT Sharp. She's the absolute best. and we're looking for a name of that segment. Start swirling around. We'll circle back to it. And a reminder that the voicemail eps are brought to you guys by Diamond Baseball Tours. You heard us talking about them in the spring. The guy that owns Diamond Baseball Tours is the man. I'm like falling for him. We send flirty texts. That's cool. That wasn't in the ad read. But go check them out, www.diamondbaseballtours. They still have registration for the Hall of Fame tour coming up. That is like a week-long baseball fan's dream. They're going to Yankee Stadium, Fenway, Philly. It ends up in Cooperstown. They take care of all the travel, all the hotels. And they do these trips all around the country. And a little spoiler, we're going to be doing a special one for Jeter next year. So get familiar with Diamond Baseball Tours. Go check them out. Sign up for their mailing list. Good guy, good people. And if you know any baseball fans, this is something they need to know. So,
boom. All right. I have no idea what order these are in. So let's just roll with it. Here we go.
Hey, guys. It's Ryan from Connecticut. It's Tuesday, and it looks like the Braves just signed Acuna to an 8-year extension worth $100 million. Do you guys see the Yankees investing in Judge long-term this year, or do you think they'll do that in the offseason? Let me know. Love the podcast. Thanks, guys.
So Acuna got a big extension. I don't know what it was. Isn't he just coming off his first year?
Yeah, so we saw a lot of younger guys get extensions. We saw Tatis get one before he played an inning. Eloy Jimenez. Acuna Matata. He's 21 years old. He played 1 year. He had 26 homers in 111 games, 16 steals, one rookie of the year. The guy's a stud. His extension is till 2028. And basically, starting in 2023, he makes $17 million a year. I forget if it was 8 years for a Hundy spot, or I'm not doing good at the math right now. There's some options on the end. Jimmy, here's my thing, and I'll just get it out there. I think with Judge, he's gonna push it a couple more years closer to his free agency. These other young guys that signed, Ronald Acuna. He can still become a free agent at age 29. He could still become a free agent at age 30 if the Braves pick up his team option.
Out his arbitration years. But even if the Yankees buy out Judge's arbitration years, Judge would get shorted. Sevy took a team friendly deal because Sevy has an on and off career and probably got scared by the second half and the injury. Hicks took a kind of a friendlier deal because Hicks has injury problems and never expected to get a big deal. Why would Judge sign an extension? I mean, now.
That's the thing. I don't think he's going to. And I mean, part of Severino's was getting paid through some of his arbitration years. He took the money. For Judge, man, I think the age thing is a huge factor. Aaron Judge is going to have one big payday in Major League Baseball. The earliest he can become a free agent is 2023, which, I mean, essentially brings him to age 30. So if he keeps it going till then, I do think the Yanks will try to almost nip it in the butt and maybe end of this year or potentially next year sign him to an 8-year, 9-year big deal like that with some options. Right now, it doesn't make too much sense for them to because they're paying him the minimum.
None of these extensions make that much sense to me anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the Acuna one, they're basically getting some options for a couple extra years that would go past his arbitration for him to get money in his pocket now. I could do a whole finance equation. I won't because I don't understand it. But if Judge puts it together this year, there's a chance they'll come together and just do it. And they'll do a little arbitration raise and then the contract he deserves. I don't know. I think it's on the horizon.
Okay. I don't think it's on the horizon. I think it's probably maybe in the... What do you mean by on the horizon? You mean next offseason?
I'd say a year and a half or two.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying closer. Yeah, okay.
No. Okay. I think if Judge puts it together this year, Jim, I think you know, they'll prorate it with some of the salary arbitration stuff. They pay him. And I mean, maybe I'm biased, but Jim, he gives off all the vibes. I mean, he seems like he's going to be the next Yankee captain. And if once they give him that extension, that's when they're going to give him that.
They said that in that book, that Pride of the Inside the, what's it called? I have it right here. Remember? Inside the Empire.
Inside the Empire.
There's a part where it's that book. A book, Jake. Anyone listening? I'll do like a, me and Joe's McFly want to do a book report on it.
Right.
It kind of sucks.
Oh boy.
It's just Cashman's point of view.
Okay.
Like the everything from the Michael Kay show is everything in the book, and when they tell the stories, they don't tell anyone but Cashman's point of view. Like the story of how Girardi was crying.
Right.
They never asked Girardi and asked Girardi, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and you're also really close with Brian Cashman, so it's kind of unfair. You basically already know.
No, I'm just, I believe that this is what Brian Cashman wants to
eat. You and Cash were friends, bud.
Yeah, so interesting book. But in that book, they said that they want Judge to be a Yankee for life, which is smart.
I mean, dude, the aura that's around him. I know that's not why you give out big contracts and captain badges. You give it to him for the 50 home run seasons, but he's everything.
Well, speaking of captain, that's our next voicemail.
Hey guys. I'm not going to lie. I'm not like a baseball historian. I don't know the history of captains, but I'm wondering if captains of teams have to be contact hitters, because I know Judge, like, I see a lot of posts about Judge being the next captain, but can you really have a captain that's, I mean, I'm not trying to be a prisoner of the moment, but like tonight, right now against the Tigers, he has like 4 strikeouts. I feel like a captain has to be like a contact hitter. I don't know, that's just me, but let me know what you guys think.
Pretty interesting point of view here, Jake. Do you think to be captain, you have to be a contact hitter?
I'll say a gentle no. I mean, you can have a bad day on the baseball field in a lot of ways. Derek Jeter had 0-for-4s. Everyone that plays the game of baseball every person that's been a captain of a baseball team has 0-for-4 days. I understand what the person's asking to a degree. I think the bigger thing with Judge, if he is to become a captain, and A, they want to give him the extension because he can't make him a captain, and then he kind of has a huge bargaining chip because that's a big thing in Yankees world. The bigger thing is, like, Yankee captains don't give that out easily, and it's usually later. I mean, Jeter didn't become the Yankee captain until he was 29, which
6 years in, 2003, yeah. And he came up in 96. Yeah, yes. So I'm going through the history right now. Thurman Munson, contact hitter. His average was pretty good. Don Mattingly, yeah, Donnie Baseball, he could hit. Willie Randolph, yeah, good. Greg Nettles, his highest batting average ever was .276 with the Yankees. His batting average as a Yankee was .253. So there you go. And Ron Guidry was not a contact hitter at all. Not even close. So there's some history there. No, Judge gets on base like every game. So, and it's so much more an attitudinal thing.
Yeah.
So whatever.
So like a leader.
Is that what it is?
Kinda.
Yo, it's Jared from Jackson. I was wondering if you think Talkman and Wade have any chance of playing past the injuries of Andujar and Stanton. I think they're good players, but I think they're not as good as Stanton and Andujar. But if Andujar is gone for long, do you think that either Wade or Talkman will stay here? Thank you.
What's Wade and Talkman's future? Right now, no. I mean, they're not lasting on this team. Neither are lasting on this team. All it takes is for Hicks to come back.
Or G might beat him back.
Eventually, hopefully, I mean, we'll see if Clint keeps this up. this is very, very biased in the moment, but it looks like if Hicks come back and G comes back, they both come back, Clint staying up, Tauchman, Wade, and Bird are going down. But that's right now. Tomorrow, Bird can go 3 for 4, and Clint can go 0 for 4, and we'll be like, oh, now we got to wait and see. But Clint looks locked in.
A lot can happen on the field, and a lot can happen with the injuries. It's not like we got our injuries and it's done for.
I don't think we've been able to answer a question yet. You know, every single question, like what happens when this happens?
Right.
Something has happened before that happening every time.
Yeah, we haven't had a push come to shove yet. I'll say this. You want a damning sign for Tauchman? Why didn't he pitch hit for Urshela in the ninth tonight?
Because he sucks.
There you well, and there it is.
Because he said, let's go, and the whole team laughed at him.
Yeah.
So, but
I was getting so amped for Rally Tauchman. Just trying to lean into a fastball.
That would be funny. Roger Dorn.
That's his game.
Hey, Joe from New Jersey here. I've been listening for about a year. You guys are really doing a great job. Talking about, you know, the start to the year that we've had. Personally, I think we had a problem this spring training, getting a little too amped up around the team in general, and I think that may be contributing to some of these injuries. Like, these guys have been having problems with, you know, starting too early. Just wanted to know your guys' take on that. All right, guys, go Yanks.
I love the energy in spring training. I'm not blaming that on anything. Unless he's saying the injuries happened because they were too riled up, but I can't connect that dot. It's just the injuries, man. I mean, do you remember how miserable we felt in that Boston series last year, Jake, when the Boston massacre, and we were like down in the dumps? And now we look back at it and it's like Sessa started, Chance Adams started. Shane Robinson played every game. We were a shell of ourselves. That's what we are now. We're going to look back at some of these lineups, hopefully when we're healthy, and be like, wow, yeah, that wasn't our best team, huh? But right now we can't do that, because right now we just have to win.
That six-hole Tauchman lineup is already burnt into my head as a miserable lineup. And Jim, I think all of this would be less of a topic. Like, if we won tonight and we snuck out another game and, you know, our record was a little better, I think a lot of these questions go away. The injuries are nuts. We don't know what it was. Did they push the guys too hard? Is it just the luck of the draw this year? If it happens next year, I'll tell you what, my buddy John Boy here is going to be going for throats, like on the training staff. So we'll see. Right
and
now,
I,
you
and
just
I
have
love
to...
Dono. Well, it's not Dono's fault. It's the strength and conditioning.
Right. So right now we're just chalking it up to some bad luck, and we do like to shrug and ignore that we have 11 guys on the DL now.
You have to win every day. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in the back of your head, you say, okay, well, we have 11 guys on the DL.
Yeah, and I mean,
I look at the fucking Houston's lineup, and I'm like, for the past 4 years, Correa got hurt 1 year, right? Like, they've just been healthy? Like, what's up? The hell?
Yeah.
Survive, weather the storm, weather the storm, weather the storm.
Hey, talking Yanks.
Carlos.
This is Carlos again. How you doing? Not too happy today, huh? Just read that River Avenue Blues is going to shut down, and I just want to, you know, pick your brains about if you can bring Mike or maybe somebody take care of that. I don't know. I just read that every day, and it's going to be a big hole when they're gone. And I do have a lot of respect for Mike and you guys, of course, and I don't know, maybe you can work together. I don't know, man. What are your thoughts on it? I love you guys.
All right. Thanks, Carlos. Yeah, River Ave Blues is shutting down, which is crazy because it has been a staple. Mike said he got burnt out. I told you this, Jake, when I love doing what we're doing so much right now that when I read his, I got sad thinking, shit, at some point I'm going to get burnt out doing this. It's just life. That's what happens. But I think Mike's burnt out, Carlos. I don't think he wants to do anything. If he wanted to do anything with us, he would just do it on his own. He has the platform. I've never interacted with Mike, but I've read a lot of his words, so that's cool. I don't know. We provide a different kind of content than he did, but we'll do our best.
Yeah, and I mean, he's at CBS Sports now. He's on to that. And yeah, I mean, we're friendly with Jay. We're friendly with a lot of that crew. As we mentioned, Katie Sharp is going to be on the show in a little bit. I've been doing a podcast with her about the UConn Huskies, talking Huskies for a little bit now, and she's just been popular in the Yankees universe for a little while now. So we're going to try to get her a little more involved. And yeah, I would say this. Our website is out there. We've been getting some blogs and some regular articles. I will say this. I mean, we're not in the most polite way to River Avenue Blues. We're not going to try to be them. We have our own voice. They had their own voice.
I couldn't. Mike's too professional. He's like legit.
Yeah, and I think our goal, we'll have some of that, especially if, you know, KT gets involved. But I mean, even Katie Sharp kind of wants to bring the professionalism down a little bit because it's more real that way and it's more fun. And I think...
Yeah, I wish I could write like Mike, though, and organize my thoughts on word like him. That's a skill.
Yeah, can just talk. I mean, people like try to learn that and go to school for that and stuff. And he's really good at what he does. We're gonna do what we do when we do, baby. And we're gonna have a lot of fun with it. But if you haven't checked out the website, go check it out. We've been doing a lot of fun stuff on there.
JohnBoyMedia.com will get you right there. Talking Yanks still gives issues, but it might get you there.
Hey guys, it's Maggie from Buffalo. Also want to say hi to my dad, aka Bushy Boy. I turned him on to your podcast.
Bushy Boy.
He loves it. Anyway, I'd like to lighten the mood here with all these injuries. So my question is, you guys are both in relationships. So I wanted to ask, who would be the Yankee that you guys would be most afraid to leave your girl alone with? Obviously, they're the big guys, Judge, Stanton. They're always going to be liable to steal your girl. Maybe it's Country Ham and Eggs, Lukey Boy, fun guy like Dee Dee, cool teddy bear like Gary or Cece, or even, you know, someone sneaky like Brett. As a girl, I'd say Judge for sure. He's got that nice guy thing down, but that just makes him even more dangerous, in my opinion. Anyway, love to hear what you guys think. Go Yanks.
All right. Thanks, Maggie from Buffalo, daughter of Butchie Boy. Interesting question here. Start sending your answer. Caitlin.
Shout out.
I need you real quick.
Shout out to Butch. Interesting. I guess an easy answer should be all of them.
Yeah.
It's kind of.
No, not some. Like,
I don't want to
Chapman's
golf
too scary.
Rules on this, but they have the honors.
Katie, we just had a voicemail. Maggie called and she said, which Yankee should I be the most worried about to leave you alone with because he'd steal you away from me? Do you have an answer? My guess, do you want me to guess or do you want to give me your answer first? My guess is Dee Dee. Oh, that was it?
Yes.
Dee Dee. I mean, Dee Dee, I saw Dee Dee in person and he almost stole me away from Katie.
Right.
So we share the same birthday. Both into video,
intellectual.
Both into video editing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mine's Dee Dee.
And you and Dee Dee are so similar. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think I would go.
Tereus?
I'm going dark horse here, Jim.
Who are you going?
Louis Sessa. He's kind of got that slick. Like I've made the Andy Pettit comparison before. He just seems friendly. Like, all of his posts are always happy and stuff, even when he was, like, pretty disliked in Yankee land. Just seems like he's having a good time out there. Seems nice enough. He wouldn't try to do too much. Obviously, it doesn't take much to impress my girlfriend. So I think if the big guys came in too hot, that would be too much. I think Louie would just be kind of on the sideline, maybe dancing a little bit, and then bait her in.
Nice. All right. Dee Dee and Luis Sessa. How about that?
Boom.
Hey, John Boy and Jake. This is Raph from Boston. You know, I'm a huge fan of great baseball. I think that the play at the top of the sixth inning, bases loaded, no outs, that pickoff play on Gary Sanchez was great baseball, but can we please just teach him how to, you know, dive head first, you know, maybe slide, keep himself in the bag. That's all I have to say. Thanks, guys.
Fundamentals. Let's get on it. I do agree. Even Clint almost got picked off a couple times today, and I was just like, end this. End this. No more mistakes on the base paths. They need to put up a outs on the base paths. They need to put up on, it's been 3 days since we made an out on the base paths in the dugout.
I like that. Maybe a jar right there too. Money jar. If you get thrown out on the base paths, $20.
$100, Jake.
Well, I mean, I don't know. These guys have families, man.
$100. This is real shit. I'm not joking. This may sound like a joke and we're making jokes. Those two things should be implemented stat right away. It's been how many days since we made an out on the base paths? And if you make the out, you put $100 into the tip jar. And it goes to buying Dono a nice brush.
Yeah, we might have to put that in like Brian Hoke or someone's ear that's in the locker room and just kind of get that swirling.
Why don't we just do it on Twitter, you and I?
We can and we will, but like I think with a push with one of our guys, I think we could actually get that in the Yankees clubhouse.
It should be in the clubhouse. Do you know what I'm doing?
That's what
Jake?
I'm saying.
Do you know what I'm doing on Twitter?
What are you doing on Twitter, Jim?
So you know how Pitching Ninja has been like getting guys' looks for real? Like he posts them pitching and then...
Right.
Remember? I'm going to establish something, or I'm going to accomplish something on Twitter this year. I'm getting Tanaka a gold glove.
Okay.
I started a thread. Get Tanaka a gold glove in 2019. And every time he makes a play, I'm going to put it on that thread all season. And everyone's job is to retweet it and tag all the beat writers that get a vote. And if we do it enough, they'll just be like, all right, fuck it. I guess I'm voting Tanaka for gold glove.
I like it.
It's grassroots.
Social experiment.
I'm getting Tanaka a gold glove.
Proud of both of you.
We all are. I'm going to spearhead it, and I need everyone's help. Okay? Hashtag get Tanaka a gold glove. What is the next voicemail?
Hey, what's up, John? Morning, Jake. It's Sam calling from the Jersey Shore. Just a quick hitter for you, just a random, completely random question. How many saves do you think are going to come from people not named Aroldis Chapman, and who are they going to come from? All right. That was all I just had it on my mind, because I know sometimes he goes through struggles, maybe Britton or Ottavino. Maybe Betances, when he comes back, might pick up the slack. Hopefully it's all Chapman and we kick ass this season. Peace.
There will be days where you need like back-to-back saves and Chapman just went or something like that. And maybe Chapman takes a week off. I hope he doesn't ever lose the closing job. But even if he doesn't lose the closing job, okay, so I'm going to say Chapman never loses the closing job because I don't want that to happen. So I'm not even going to act like it's possible. I'm going to say how many saves come up over the course of the year where Chapman's unavailable because he worked 2 days in a row before. I'm going to say three. Say three times someone else gets the save. And I think Otto is going to get one and Betances is going to get two.
Interesting analysis. I think.
Why are you laughing at my analysis? I think it's pretty sound.
I said it was great. I'm sorry. I'm a giggly guy, man. I think Chapman's had a few injuries in the past years. I think he's almost going to be on a CC path where he's like a one knee injury a year kind of guy. Like that plant knee, I think, bothers him every year now.
Tendonitis.
So, I mean, right now it's Ottavino by a mile. A, we love Dellin in that eighth inning role when he's right to the point we almost don't want to mess with him. And Ottavino's stuff just looks silly. It looks like a complete video game right now. So it's Ottavino.
Okay. Betances may come back, and Betances is great too. All right, we're running out of time a little bit, so I'm going to a couple more. Oh, man, this is Nick from Santa Barbara. I feel bad because he called three times, but okay. It sounds like he's under 1,000 miles of water, 1,000 leagues under the sea. Sorry, Nick.
Translate, maybe?
No, because I did a bad job taking notes. It was something about first base. He thinks Voit and Bird both aren't getting the job done and wants to pick up like Smoke or something.
Yeah, some people were talking about Smoke because the Blue Jays were selling. I actually saw Mike Axiza said the Yankees should be on the horn with him trying to get him. It is a development, Jim. It is so early, but the first base job has gone from cool fun to not as cool fun recently. Birdie and Voit haven't looked as impressive as they did.
Yeah, hopefully Voit got a nice piece of hitting with runners in scoring position by Voit today versus Verlander for the RBI single.
Yeah.
I liked that. I think that was good. He's got a hit in his last four games now, Voit. So we could be. I still have faith in Voit.
Yeah. I think his batting average is still below 200.
Well, he needs to rack up a couple at-bats. His on base is 357. Batting average, it needs to be higher than that, obviously, but the other stats are pretty high for being that low.
Yeah, I mean, his OPS is still in the sevens, right?
Yeah, 721.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's, again, still small sample size, a good game from Voit, and he's having a good season again. This was the worst Birds looked. I know that's not a hot take because he had the golden sombrero, but he had a couple pitches to hit, and he just fouled them off, and then he looked awful with two strikes. So,
yep.
Worst Bird game so far.
Is this crazy to say? What's up, John Boy? What's up, Jake? I like DJ LeMahieu starting when Andujar comes back. I like him over Andujar. Get rid of Tulo. They'll have Andujar on the bench. But because it's so consistent, his bat and his glove, I like DJ better. What do you think?
Okay. I don't want to say what I'm about to say.
Here we go.
Urshela and DJ at third have been breaths of fresh air, man. Those little dribblers that Urshela can come in and just make, and DJ can come in and just make, and with Andujar, he can make majority of them. That's fine. But you hold your breath. It's a completely different feeling. We'll see what Andujar's story is. I think he's going to miss the whole season, but I don't know, man. When you see the steady defense at third, you really, really like it.
I told you, playoff Bregman last year really opened my eyes. I hadn't seen that in a long time. Even the ball, there was a hop that hopped up on Urshela and almost caught him in the biscuits. RIP Gary, get better, bud.
Do you want me to do live play-by-play? 7 seconds left, 68-68. Texas Tech puts up a three, misses, rebound. Oh, wow, Jake. 0.8 seconds left in the national championship game, tied 68-68.
Overtime.
No, someone's going to get a shot here.
0.8?
0.8.
Sounds like you're going to call it, so.
This is exciting. Well, they're going to do a timeout and stuff like that, so I'll go to the next voicemail, and I'll just intertwine my call to the national championship game as we go.
Do we answer the question?
It's not an answer. We have to see. It could be so far away. It could be next season.
Yeah, there's been a lot of positivity around it. We'll see what happens.
I don't buy a single thing of positivity that the Yankees say about these injuries.
The most positive thing I've heard about an injury has been the Andujar stuff.
That he threw a ball?
That they think he's coming back now this year.
I haven't heard that. I just heard that he's started throwing and the chances same
thing. I thought
thing.
I saw a lot of tweets saying he was trying to come back this year.
Yeah, but so was Seve, and now Seve's got another setback.
Right, but his was never optimistic. It was like he's going to throw on flat ground and throw, and now he's not. I don't know. I'm just telling you what I've seen.
Yeah, I don't put any stock into any of the updates until the dude is wearing a uniform and in between the lines playing rehab games. They could be months away. All of them, besides CeCe. CeCe's going to be on the team soon, and he just did a rehab game. So there you go. Everyone else. I mean, I know I'm cynical, so I lean way on the cynical side, but sure. I don't believe any of their updates.
Next. What's up, fellas? This is David from Toronto. Just asking, trying not to overreact here, but with Voit hitting 182 at this point, do you think he should be moved out of the three spot to five or six and Gary or Glaber move to three, just so that Judge has some pitches to hit, because at this point, he's getting nothing to hit. Thanks. Take care, fellas.
There's a flush at the end. Nice flush pod. Everyone knows I don't care about batting order that much. But yeah, if they were to move Voit out of the three hole, I would say, yeah, nice. That makes sense. If they were to keep Voit in the three hole, I would say, all right, hopefully he breaks out. We actually talk about this coming up with Kate Sharp a little bit. Batting order matters like zero amount in the end.
Yeah.
Guys have to hit.
People want to put more of an emphasis on it than it is. I naturally, I like Voit slid down a little more, but again, guys, we have a ton of people hurt. Stanton, Hicks, Andujar. Like, these are all guys that could be ahead of Voit in a batting order so naturally.
So naturally. Four of our top six batters, Hicks, Stanton, Hicks, Stan, Andujar, Didi, would all be in the top six of the batting order if they were healthy.
Yep.
And they're not.
Hey guys, it's Suzanne from the DMV, originally from upstate New York. Quick call. I was at two of the three games at Orioles Park at Camden Yards. It was awesome being in the crowd for opening day and then the home run extravaganza on Sunday. I do have an opinion on your Yankee motherfucker. If motherfucker is a little too hard, maybe come with that damn Yankee. Just a thought. I'm totally good with the Yankee MF-er, especially with your soundbite. You guys are doing great. I tell every Yankee fan I meet to subscribe to you guys. Let's keep growing. Go Yanks.
Let's keep growing. I love that. That gave me Suzanne. That was very nice. Suzanne from the DMV, originally from upstate New York. She says you can call it that damn Yankee. I had a good amount of feedback, Jake, in the DMs on Instagram and Twitter and everywhere. It's staying. Yankee motherfucker is staying. Not one person reached out and said I'd like it to be changed.
Right.
1 second on the clock. Texas Tech inbounds, takes to three. Terrible, terrible shot going to OT.
0.8.
No, they put 0.2 back on the clock. Had 1 second.
Had it.
You missed it. Yeah, so that damn Yankee, it's going to say the Yankee motherfucker. I'll try my best to say the F word. Oh, it got blocked. Wow, nice play. I'll try my best to say the F word less outside of the Yankee motherfucker part.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing to you. All right, that ends the voicemails. We are going to throw it now to a new section of the show, so let's drop the music. All right, here's our new segment for every Tuesday episode. We have special guest, recurring guest. She's going to come on every Tuesday, Katie Sharp, KT Stats. You may know her from Twitter. You may know her from her Yankee Metrics with River Ave Blues, Talking Huskies with Jake. She's been a guest on Talking Yanks before, and we're super excited to have her bring all her knowledge to the table every Tuesday to talk about some of the deeper analytics. Katie, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited.
These are worlds colliding for me. Normally deal with you two separately, but we're all back together again. This is going to be fun. We'll get KT, the queen of stats, as everyone knows, or if you don't know, now you know. And yeah, let's roll it out there. We'll get some good stats. We'll get some opinions out there, and I'm guessing by the end of these, Katie is going to look pretty good, and we're going to say, okay, that was cool.
I learned.
We learned today.
We're looking for a name for this segment, so we need your guys' help. We were throwing things around like the stats report or stats reporter or Katie's corner or Katie's clubhouse. We need all of those are like in the correct area, but just a little too lame for my liking. So we decided to ask you guys, our great audience, we need some ideas. Throw everything you got at us.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So as you guys know, Katie's great with stats. If you don't follow her on Twitter, you're missing out because the insights you get are unreal. So we have a couple things. We're going to try and just talk about what's going on under the surface. And now this first one that I said is I brought this up to the on Twitter the other day, and it's the ex-WOBA stat, Katie, which you taught me when you came on the show last year. I asked, about what stat do you, what's your favorite stat? And you said WOBA. And that was my first time really understanding it. I have an issue with WOBA and whoever named it. Stupidest name. Stupidest name. If it was called something that isn't, like, you throw an X and a W together, people are out. They're like, that's math. I'm out. Because all it is saying, if you are unfamiliar with WOBA, and Katie can correct me, it's saying, okay, Gary hit this ball 101 miles per hour at a 42 degree angle. Every ball that has been hit with those same exact measurements in the last 5 years, 80% of them have been home runs. So the expected result is Gary to hit a home run. But park factor, did he hit it to the deepest part of that park that he's in? Wind resistance, defensive shifts can change those, and that's what you'd say, unlucky. Is that the layman terms breakdown of WOBA?
That's not the layman terms breakdown of WOBA.
Okay.
WOBA, just the core WOBA, is basically, it's a better form of an offensive measure, like a performance measure on offense.
Okay.
So, you know, we have OPS, which a lot of people like to cite as sort of, ooh, the new sabermetric stat. But that's really not a good measurement of a true offensive talent, because what you're doing is the weights in OPS are all wrong. So okay. What WOBA does is it measures a single the correct way, it measures a triple the correct way, it measures a double the correct way, and a homer the correct way, and a walk the correct way.
Oh, I was doing...
In terms of... You were doing X-WOBA.
X-WOBA, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So WOBA, we know what that does is it uses what's called linear weights. And basically all that does is it makes sure that, you know, a home run is worth four times as much as a single, right? And a double is not twice as much as a single. What it does is it weights those correctly in quarter in terms of, you know, how many runs they're expected to produce when you hit one.
Okay.
So, and then when you add the X in there, your favorite letter, that's when you, what it does is basically that looks at WOBA, but then it does what it's supposed to do based on the launch angle and the exit velocity of the batted ball.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So Gary was leading after the first five games or so. He was leading all of majors in small sample size, but that's what we have to work with, in X-WOBA, which is it's a nerdy way of saying Gary's hitting the hell out of the ball and expect good things to happen if he keeps this up. And he did, and he went Babe Ruth on us. So is there any other underlying stats to tell, like, that you saw that was like, oh shit, Gary might be going off soon?
Yeah, I mean, and that was a great point. I saw that. I saw your tweet on Twitter, and I was like, John Boy, man, yo, he's smart. Now that I know who taught him to be so smart, I'm feeling a little bit better about it.
There you go.
One other thing that I wanted to cite is, yes, the X-WOBA stat, that's great. He's hitting the crap out of the ball. He's also leading in some of the more traditional, like expected stats of expected slugging. He's also the best in that. And then there's another stat I wanted to cite, which is on StatCast, you can find there, which is barrels. And barrels, for people who don't know, are basically, it's like the best type of contact that you can make with a ball in order for it to be like an extra base hit or a home run or something.
Whoever named this one did a good job.
Yes. I figured you'd like this one. So basically the batting average on, you know, an average barrel last year was 822. So you're hitting 822 and you have a slugging of 2.386 when you hit a barrel. So that's good. Basically, it's going to go for a home run or a double or something like that.
So that was an 832 batting average, Katie. If you barrel it, you're getting a hit 83% of the time?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay.
And you're averaging about 2.4 bases per hit, which is what slugging percentage is. So yeah, so that's basically, you know, kind of the best type of batted ball you can have. And Gary was leading in barrels per plate appearance. So the percentage of barrels per plate appearance. He's leading in total barrels, one more than Mike Trout. And he's leading in barrels per batted ball. So of all the batted balls he's hit, 40 percent of them have been like mashing.
Wow.
You know, like if you consider barrel to be like a mashed ball, 40% of the time that Gary has put the ball in play, it's just like, you know, it's going to go far and it's going to go high and the whole, you know, we can get John Sterling to chime in there.
And I was talking to my dad about the WOBA stat and stuff like that, because I mean, it's all new to him, but he does a good job accepting it, or at least trying to accept it, you know, the new stats. And what made it resonate a little bit when I said, like, well, Gary's leading the league in this ex-WOBA stat. He's just hitting the ball really hard right now, but the results aren't exactly there. And I said, Trout's number two and blah, blah. I forget who it was. But, you know, the leaders in barrels in WOBA, they are the dudes. It's not like you're going to find some scrub you've never heard of who, like, buddy, can barrel up the ball. You know what I mean? Like, it's usually the top tier guys land up. And that's how you know when, like, the eye test and the stat meets up. Because if you look at the end result of a stat and it's just completely different than what you would assume from watching baseball, those are the stats that I can't get behind, because I very much am in the opinion the eye test is there and then you lean on the stats to back up the eye test. A lot of people think the eye test is terrible now and you just can do it with stats. I don't know what side of the fence you guys land on, but basically, these stats, barrels and WOBA, but the top tier guys are who you expect. Like Trout's up there and everything.
Yeah, kind of what you're doing is you're putting numbers to the eye test, essentially. Because yeah. Mm-hmm. Before StatCast existed, people would always be like, oh, he's hitting the ball hard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing was, that thing just, you know, he smoked that ball. but now you can really say with authority and, you know, have the data to back it up that, yeah, Gary is really, you know, he's hitting the ball hard. And, you know, one other thing I want to point out is that people kind of lament his 250 batting average, or when he's hitting 220 or something like that. Well, his expected batting average, which is, you know, another one of those stats based on launch angle and exit velocity, is 364. So essentially he's had a bunch of hits robbed from him that should have gone for hits probably, you know, at least 75% of the time normally. And so I think that you can see that he's really having, you know, a really productive season so far, even though, you know, people may not like the fact that he's only has, you know, maybe he only has 8 hits or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, and how much does defensive shifts come into play there? Because Gary ropes a lot of balls kind of right up the middle and they're positioned perfectly. Would that factor into the expected batting average? Does it take into account shifts, or is it saying that he hits into the shifts?
Well, it does not account for shifts per se, because it's just based on historically what the characteristics of the batted ball, like exit velocity and launch angle. So it's not taking into account where the fielders are positioned, but he's actually hit well against the shifts. Cool. Which is basically because he's hitting the ball over the shifts, and he's hitting the ball so hard that it goes through the shifts, essentially, is what he's doing.
Hopefully, by the time people are listening to this, he popped Verlander twice. We're recording before the game, yes. But I'm just going to go ahead and assume Gary hit 2 more home runs. He's now made contact with 9 balls and has 7 or 8 home runs. So
yeah,
this is exciting.
A couple other things I wanted to point out to you guys. About why I kind of feel pretty good about what he's doing. And, you know, we said at the beginning, small sample size, blah, blah, blah. But he has a sub-20 strikeout rate right now. It's only 19%. His career rate is about 25%. He was at like 26% last year. As we're recording this, he's got like 35, 40 plate appearances. So it's not meaningful, but that's going to be a trend that, you know, you want to keep watching. And an even better one, which is what I like, is that 4 of his 6 homers at this point have come with 2 strikes.
I love that. That's one of my favorite things about the home runs.
Yeah. So he's actually 5 for 22 with 4 home runs in 2 strike counts this year. Which
and
is
adding the 2 he got on Verlander today.
Yes. Okay. No, we need to add 2 more than that then.
Those were both 2 strikes as well.
They were 0-2 pitches,
yeah,
of course.
Yes, of course.
Right? You know, down and
really big curveballs from Verlander. I like painting the picture now.
Yeah.
So that's super encouraging. I mean, everybody struggles with two strikes. I'm not going to recite his numbers from last year. And the other one that I wanted to point out was that he's only had a handful of plate appearances against lefties. I think it was, at this point, as we're recording this, it's only six of his plate appearances have come versus lefties. And he has, you know, he's dominated lefties in his career. I mean, that's no secret. Last year, his stats versus lefties were basically the same as his career. If you look at it, slugging, OPS, batting average, on base percentage, it's where what he did against righties, where he was way below average. I think his slugging percentage was about 200 points below his career against righties last year. So this year he's doing it all against righties. He's seeing the ball really well. And those are just a couple things, obviously in a small sample size, that kind of make me feel a little bit better about what he's doing this year.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that Jimmy and I have stumbled into, which could be tied to all this, is Gary's healthy, I think. I think last year that shoulder was banged up more than he let on. I think we've seen it on offense and defense early this season. And I wonder if you're sitting there saying, wow, these guys and gals are coming out with some serious hot takes after Gary hit his three home runs. These stats were there before the three home runs. So that's what we're trying to show you, that, you know, and we can keep an eye for that. If, you know, someone comes back and you start seeing those numbers climb, maybe that'll be a good tell. Maybe not another three homer game, but someone getting hot quick. And Katie, I wanted to kind of jump over to the second thing you have here, because we knew what we were getting into the ex-WOBA a little bit, and it's a lot of fun to talk about, especially what we just saw from Gary. You said you've got some fun numbers on Gleyber, and you have clutch in parentheses there, so I'm excited to see what you have.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you guys believe in the clutch gene. I'm such sort of a net stat nerd that I kind of don't believe in it, but at the same time,
yeah, you do.
At the same time, and I'm an athlete, you know, a former athlete, college athlete, and so, you know, I've been around people who just they just rise to the occasion, and there is something to be said for it.
It's calm under pressure. Like, I don't think you can take the emotion of a human out of the situation. You know what I mean? Like, if some dude is very, very nervous in pressure situations, which is a human trait for some people, and other people are super calm and kind of like Bernie. Maybe Bernie or Manny Ramirez, just like dumb to not think. They don't think. They're not. Their skill set is that they don't actively think. Then they're going to be better in those pressure situations that can like calm themselves down. And the stats can't account for that. So while I love stats, I hate when people try to tell me there's no such thing as clutch. Like Matsui, Jeter, those dudes rose to the occasion when it mattered more than your normal player.
Exactly. And I think, you know, that word calm, I think is really good. And I think I was reading in one article, you know, the past week about how that's one of the things that Aaron Boone mentioned about him, was that he just seems so calm at the plate. The situation doesn't matter. And, you know, I do have some stats to sort of really back this up. There are some stats where you can kind of look at clutch. And I'm not saying that it's a predictive stat. So I'm not saying that he's going to keep doing this for the rest of his career. It's what we like to call in the sabermetric world a descriptive stat. So it's described what's already happened. You know, you can't, these are the facts. You can't deny this. So what Fangraphs does is they kind of split up plate appearances in terms of leverage. And basically what you're saying is, how much pressure is this situation? You know, is there a guy on first and third and two outs, and you're down by one? Or is it bases empty and no outs and you're leading by 10? So obviously one is low pressure, one is high pressure. And they put them into categories of high, medium, and low. And so I looked up some of Gleyber's stats after he hit that, you know, that huge home run to win the game on, I think it was Saturday. Thursday, Saturday, whenever it was, you know what we're talking about. And since the start of last season, so this looking at these high leverage stats, he leads all of Major League Baseball, guys with at least 40 plate appearances, in high leverage batting average, slugging percentage, OPS, RBIs, our favorite stat, WOBA, and then another stat I'm not going to go into, but weighted runs created plus, which is basically park adjusted WOBA. So it's basically the same thing. And he's second in home runs hit in these situations to Chris Davis with a K.
Thank you for clarifying that. Everyone was about to throw those stats out if you said the other Chris Davis.
Exactly. So basically, he has been, essentially, he's been the best offensive player, the most productive player in these high leverage situations since the start of last season, you know, over his entire career.
This is taking all of 2018 in account?
Yes. This is since the start of last season. So it's not just a small, I mean, it is a small sample in terms of, you know, the bigger picture, but it's just looking at his entire career and comparing it to the rest of the league. And I think that that says a lot about what he's done in these high pressure situations.
And I think here's like an eye test explanation for it, I would say, is that he adjusts his swing mid pitch, where Voit, Judge sometimes does, like Hicks doesn't, Stanton doesn't. They don't adjust their approach for the situation that much. And Glaber does. If he reads curveball and thinks he can reload and then slap a single on that curveball, he'll do that. You know, you don't see the other guys change their swing. And that's by design. Like Barry Bonds says, if you don't take your full swing every time you swing, you're a fool. Like, he never checked his swing. He took his home run swing every swing. So that's what the home run hitters do. So there's good and bad to both sides. But I think Glaber, he recognizes pitches and the situation and will adjust. So that's like the eye test backing up. That's probably why he's good in these situations, because he will do what he needs to do on that given pitch.
Yeah, I think we actually saw that in that game when he swung through a high fastball earlier in the game, and then the home run, the clinching home run that he hit, that 3-run homer, that was, or whatever it was.
I think it was the same at bat.
Yeah, was it in the same at bat when he hit another high fastball and it went out of the park?
I think he opened him up with a high fastball. If I recall this correctly, the first pitch was a high fastball that was called strike, and then they went back to it, and Glaber swung through it, and then they went back to it again. It was a missed spot, and Glaber crushed it for a homer. So, yeah, he makes those adjustments and figures out the situation.
And then I think you can also point to the fact that he is basically split-proof in terms of home versus road, lefties versus righties. He has nearly identical career OPSs against lefties and righties, and the same on the at home and on the road. So a guy that's that consistent in his approach, regardless of sort of the environmental factors or where he is or who he's facing, I think he's inevitably going to be, you know, good in those pressure situations.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to have a see even more of who Glaber is this season, as long as he stays healthy, which has been a huge problem for the Yankees here. And we just got, I don't know if you guys saw this, it just came through a couple minutes ago. Bad news on Severino. He's going to get more testing of the MRI. He has a setback. So that might mean a Domingo Germán show rolls on for a long time. We'll see how it goes. But you had a note here. You wanted to talk about the depth that they have and the stats to support, like, the depth the Yankees have versus other teams, or how are you going to lay this out for us? What do we have here on the depth?
Well, I think, you know, well, first I wanted guys to point out that of their injured players, basically, I mean, this was an enormous hit, I think, more than people kind of realize, that last year, they've got 11 players on the DL, right? And 8 of them played last year. And those 8 accounted for about 47% of the total WAR on the team.
It's crazy.
And yeah, that's pretty crazy. And then if you look at the projections, so for those 11 players, what they were projected to do this year for the team, it's about 50% of the team's projected WAR. And this is coming from Fangraphs, what's called their Zips projections. So basically, they lost half of what they were supposed to have this year in the first week of the season. And, you know, kind of the ability of these players to step up has been really what's been remarkable. If you look at LeMahieu, he's gotten on base half his plate appearances. He has been a steady force And then you've got, you know, kind of on the pitching side, you've got, you know, you've got the Domingo Germán, essentially your sixth or your seventh starter. And he has a 1.64 ERA and just, you know, has allowed one hit and two hits in his first two appearances. So I think that that's, you know, that's looking at depth. Another one is that they had 11 players that were projected for at least one WAR this season. And that was Cashman's plan, right? You know, he kind of eschewed to the chagrin of, you know, most of the Yankee world. Didn't really go hard on Machado or Harper, and instead built the team through depth. And, you know, that's kind of showed in that they have, you know, more than half of their project, you know, at least almost half of their projected 25-man roster for at least one WAR. So, which is a good thing. You don't want to have negative WAR on a team. You know,
no,
you don't want to have guys sucking out at the bottom.
Yeah. No Chris Carters, please.
No Chris Carters. Exactly. So I think that's, you know, that's kind of been one of the most telling stats, I think, so far, is that just the number of players that have stepped up who were supposed to be, you know, in AAA or was supposed to be riding the bench that have really, really played well this season.
If Clint can put it together
and
do what his talent says he should be able to do in the batter's box, then that is really sparkling depth. Like, that is the prime example of Hicks stand down, but don't worry, we'll call up Clint and he'll mash. I mean, that would be huge. And thank God he just had two more home runs off Verlander in this game.
It was nuts that Glaber got him twice, Gary got him twice, and Clint got him twice. The Yanks are hot. You're right, Jim. And I said it a lot this offseason because I kind of thought Clint was going to get packaged with Sonny Gray or something like that. Just because, as Yankees fans, we do overlook these guys sometimes. If any other team had Clint Frazier penciled in as their everyday left fielder, we'd be talking about his 30 home run potential and what he can do. And for the Yankees, we're talking about, you know, two injuries to Aaron Hicks, a WAR specialist, and Giancarlo Stanton, a guy who's won the MVP, to be able to call him up. I mean, that's huge.
We need to see it. This Houston series is going to be a big test of, like, okay, the depth's cool, but they're still not, you know, A-plus team, so what can they do? We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right, anything else we got? There was something I was thinking of that I can't remember now. Maybe next week, Katie. I want to talk about batting order. We get so many complaints about lineup construct, and should Voit be behind Judge? Should Gary now move behind Judge? Gardner in the leadoff hole. So I don't know what stats are out there. I know there's some, the three hole hitter actually comes up with no one on base more often than any other position, I think, is a stat. So I don't know. Maybe next week we'll do some batting lineup construction stats, and because everyone loves the lineup, talking about it and complaining about it.
Well, everyone hates the lineup, basically. Whatever yes. lineup that Boone puts out there, everyone is going to hate it. All right. Well, that's a challenge. That's a challenge because I don't usually like talking about the lineup stuff.
Me neither, Katie, but we get bombarded with it every day.
The bottom line, and I'll just give you, you know, a little snippet.
Shut them down now.
Essentially, it means about 1/10 of one run per game. And yes, you know, if they lose by, you know, an inch, you know, being thrown out of the plate, maybe that's the reason. But it essentially, you know, game to game, it really doesn't have much of a difference. It doesn't really make much of a difference. Over the course of a season, yes, a player that accumulates a lot of plate appearances at the top of the order obviously mm-hmm. is going to have more plate appearances than somebody who's regularly batting ninth. But, you know, for people who sort of nitpick every little game and every little batting order and every little lineup, I just get annoyed. I mean,
I'm with you.
I just get so annoyed. Anyways,
people like skipping the players. People like skipping the players any way they can and moving on to what happened. Voit had a terrible day. It's because he shouldn't be batting three. Gardner got on base once. You know, it's just blame the player.
It's kind of like the, if Judge was batting, or no, you know, if Glaber was batting three, he would have been up when, you know, with two outs in the ninth and a chance to drive in that run on second base. Well, no, yeah,
you can't do that.
You can't predict that. If you could, then you'd probably be in Vegas or something, you know?
All right. So hopefully by next Tuesday, we have a couple more players heating up on the verge of breaking out. And we have some that have broken out. Look out for Glaber in high leverage situations, and still keep an eye out for Gary just to be barreling the hell out of balls. And send us all your name ideas for this segment that's going to be on every Tuesday show with Katie Sharp, the Queen of Stats. We thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week. All right, that was Katie Sharp in the segment that has yet to be named. We need your help. Send in some...
How about this, Jim? Leave a 5-star review with what we should name the segment.
And if we choose your name, you get
a shirt.
Oh, I was going to say some stickers, but a shirt. You get a shirt.
We'll throw in the stickers with the shirt.
Nah, I can't do that.
Yeah, we won't do that. You just get a shirt. Be happy with your damn shirt, whoever names our segment.
Thanks for the name, and take your damn shirt. You see, I was going to say your effing shirt, but I held back and I said damn shirt. Because I'm doing better now.
Proud of you.
And that is the end of this show. I came into this episode very angry, and I'm leaving only mildly perturbed. So, tell them.
Gala.
Tell them, Grams.
Go Yankees.
Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.